Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton is fine. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. With just three games remaining on the schedule, the Cleveland Cavaliers are riding an 11-game losing streak. About half the team is missing. Colin Sexton got banged up in the last game. And with all that being said, I think we can be forgiven for pivoting a little bit and getting an early start on some year-end conversations. With me today to help break all that down is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Hadn't been super fun as of late. I thought Pacers game was pretty fun, though. We are playing it out, folks. And frankly, I am fully on team. It's all right if they lose out at this stage. Lottery odds are so tight. Any boost, I think we can save this conversation for later, but I will say that I'm at the point now where I have really kind of locked in on what it would mean for the franchise to get the first overall pick.
Yeah.
And how much of a fortune changer that would be. And as such, I am in, I'm bargaining for slivers of percentage points and perfectly content with that for the remainder of the season. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat. I mean, I found myself rooting for the Cavs to win in that last game, like especially with Okoro playing so well. But when the end result comes in and it's a loss, it's not something that
I'll tell you what, against the Pacers, I came as close as I have in a long time to being like, well, it's okay if we don't pull this one out. Let's maybe not.
Dork. Big old dork. I mean, the Pacers game and the Suns game stand out as two games that were kind of like palate cleansers, right? Like, we needed performances like that where they stayed close. Like, I'm fine with close losses. An OT loss is fine by me. But you're right. Like, there's an understanding of just exactly what it would mean. And be one thing if they were getting run off the court and Darius Garland, Larry Nance, and all those guys were out there. That might make me feel a little worse, even being out of the play-in. But given what's actually on the court, it's not something that's stressing me out too much at all. I do want to get to some quick news before we get into the rest of the podcast, which is that Lindsay Gottlieb, congratulations. She is now the head coach at USC, I guess starting next season. I shouldn't say now. That's not taking over just yet. But obviously, this is a loss for the Cavs. Congratulations to her. I understand it. But I think we have a consensus here where the most promising thing with the Cavs over the last year or so has been the player development, the growth that the young players have shown. And she played a massive part in that, right? Like the coaching staff, when we talked to Dave DeFore and all the other people that know stuff, more stuff than we do, they always give credit to Gottlieb, to the rest of the assistant coaches for their work in that area. So obviously it's a loss to see her go.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we may be on the payroll, but we're still not showing up to practice. We'll never really ever know the true effects of a coach. I think it's why we're always so hesitant to dig in hard on coaches critically. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got to be pretty bad for us to get there.
I like to think that we have an educated audience at this point, or at least the ones that have stuck with us kind of understand our stance of drafting decisions and GM decisions are made by an entire front office. It's not one person. Coaching decisions, how a team is coached, is a collaborative effort, right? Like, it's not just JB Bickerstaff. There's a lot of parts that go into that.
Yeah, totally. And as a result, it's hard to say exactly what Lindsay Gottlieb meant to the coaching staff. So all you got to do is kind of just look at what people had to say about her while she was here, and seemed like she was very, very revered by the players as a basketball mind, as a communicator, and I'm sure the team is going to miss her. So, obviously it seems like she had a great opportunity to go to USC. And honestly, man, I don't know how these head coaches go at any level, go become assistant coaches. I think it would drive me absolutely bonkers to have all the power and then to have to be like, maybe we should do this. That would drive me crazy. So, Obviously, it was a great opportunity for Coach Gottlieb, but not surprised at all. If you have the chance to go, you know, run a program, especially one like USC, it's no surprise that she took the jump.
Yeah, and I guess now there's a position that the Cavs need to fill. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be an expert on who the assistant coaches are that are available that might work things out. But I think it's an interesting opportunity, right? Especially when you're looking into next season where you want to take the next step. You came up short of your goal of a play-in this year. There's going to be a lot of internal development and growth from this team. And bringing in maybe an assistant that helps add a little flavor to the offense and a little more variety now that they've kind of incorporated base sets, maybe that's something that is in the team's future. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm an expert because, like, look at Toronto as an example. Right now, Toronto fans are absolutely sick of Nick Nurse and Nate Bjorgren. I'm not even going to attempt that last name. I thought I had confidence.
Nady B.
Indy, not a huge fan of him, even though he was supposed to be the offensive savant. So I think the most important thing when it comes to coaching, at least the only part that I can figure out, is that buy-in from the team is the most important thing. And I think we've seen, while the personnel might not be strong this year, the players like, respect, and buy into what JB Bickerstaff has been selling. And I think maybe you can emphasize new things in the offseason, bring in a new voice that brings a different perspective and maybe helps unlock certain things. But most of the team's issues this year, I think, really do come down to personnel more than anyone that's on the coach's bench.
Yeah, well, you said, I actually like the way you said it in our chat when we were talking about this episode. You said it's an opportunity to talk about, you know, bringing in an assistant that might add some seasoning to the offense. And I think seasoning is the right word because the Cavs offense right now is the potato salad that gets roasted at the cookout. It's a little bland.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a lot of kick, not a lot of spice. And I think that when we are talking about a coaching staff and we're trying to figure out who's good, who's bad, what's working, what's not, sometimes you do almost have to go as simply to, does it feel right? Does it look like there's enough pep in the step? Is there enough juice?
Mm-hmm.
And I think even with all the excuses that and context that you can kind of bring around JB and the way this roster and the season is shaped up, all the changeover, all the injuries, etc., I still think you could say there's a little bit of, it's still a little bland.
Yeah.
On the offensive end, the team tends to run one set. And when that gets snuffed out, they just go to a high pick and roll and hope something good happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that should be a priority for this team moving forward. There is a bit of a chicken and the egg thing there where maybe it's bland because the players don't have a ton of great decision makers that make the right reads. Maybe players aren't executing well because they're playing out of position, etc. It's hard to know, but I do think some spice is well warranted because even, like, we've seen the offensive rating get good enough. You know, they've gotten to the point where they're around, like, 110, 111 with Love back on the floor.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't have that, like, the only time it really gets electric is when Darius gets cooking and his playmaking juices start going. Like, that's the only time it feels like, whoa, they're going to outscore a team. Even when the fundamentals are working, that's the only time it really feels that way. So anything that gets them up that mountain of, like, because I think they have all the pieces on offense to have an offense that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And they just need a little more juice.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think at the same time as well, like, one of our biggest complaints last season, both offensively and defensively, was they weren't going with basics, right? Like, defensively, they were always trying to do something else. We didn't know what kind of the base core defense was. And the consistent complaint that we had last year was we have all these pick and roll ball handlers and we're a team that doesn't run pick and roll. Like, I think there was an emphasis to try to look smart and creative and whatnot. But now that you kind of do have a base offense in place where you have some kind of staples that you can go to with the high pick and roll, you've seen Garland and Allen develop chemistry there, you can start to build off of that. And that's something that you have to think of not only from a coaching standpoint, standpoint on what sets you're going to run, but also from a personnel standpoint, when you're going into the offseason, figuring out who you want to bring in, who you might ship out, what role everyone's going to have, who you're drafting. Like, all of that has to be kind of in your thought of what this what the identity of this team is going to be. And I just think that it's an interesting opportunity because we have a draft full of playmakers. You have an open coaching position now. You have, like, there's just so many things that are up in the air in so many different directions that this team can go. And that's something that I find really interesting. But while we're on the subject of playmakers, Isaac Okoro. I find it so funny that about a week removed from when we were talking about, oh, what would we like to see over these last few games? And I suggested maybe some Okoro pick and roll, maybe have him handle the ball. And you talked me out of it real quickly. That might have been a mistake from both of us, because Isaac Okoro is playing out of his damn mind right now, and he's doing it being a ball handler.
Well, circumstance certainly forced the Cavs' hand here, and yeah, I mean, Okoro's doing a really nice job. The efficiency isn't always great. There's still plays where, I mean, I feel like when it goes bad for him, it goes so bad. I think there was a layup where Sabonis just, like it was like the kind of layup you have when you're playing against your big brother and he hit puberty, but you haven't yet. Like, you're 8 and he's 13. Like, that was like how bad he got his layup packed against Sabonis. Mm-hmm. But again, between the really, really ugly finishes are these really crafty, intelligent attacks driven by footwork, driven by getting his body into the opposition. A little bit of nascent playmaking. I don't know if he's a good passer yet, but he's a solid one.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's been really, really fun to kind of see him get unlocked on that end of the floor.
Yeah. I mean, 16.5 points a game, almost 3 assists, 44-39 shooting. The number of three-point attempts, I think, is really encouraging. He shows a willingness to shoot, right? Like, that was something that, at least when we were coming into this draft process and people were comparing him to someone like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who attempted maybe 3 total threes over his first 3 seasons, Okoro's clearly not that kind of a guy. And I don't think it's necessarily surprising to see a young player do better with the ball in their hands. I think developing off-ball skills in the NBA takes time. And you look at the Auburn film, he had the ball in his hands more. So it makes sense with Garland out that he'd be a little more comfortable. But it is kind of interesting as well when you're looking at the future outlook of this team, because if unlocking Isaac Okoro, if the key to that is getting the ball in his hands, what does that mean for how you deploy Sexton, Garland, and whoever you draft? Because unless it's Evan Mobley, you're probably drafting another ball handler this year.
Yeah, and I think we're getting to the point where we're moving in the same direction on this. I think some folks were ahead of us on this particular topic, and I think he might be a 2, man.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I thought he was a 3, a pure 3 that could, guard some 2s. But when on the offensive end of the ball, I think specifically in kind of his breakout game against Phoenix, that's where I saw it, where when they had smaller guards switched on to him, like even Javon Carter, who was a very, very stout defender and very pesky defender at the point of attack, he just was too strong for him.
Yeah.
And given the fact that Okoro, I really don't think he's ever going to be an above the rim kind of player.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think his body is built that way. Jackson Frank, who we had on the pod very recently, I think put it really, really well in his feature on Okoro, where he kind of mentioned that he kind of looked not inflexible. He looks a little inflexible sometimes, like his body is very tightly packed. Right. And those guys don't typically, you think of like, let's think about an above the rim finisher, like a Zach LaVine, who kind of accelerates up and kind of stretches towards the basket on his attacks. Okoro is kind of a bowling ball on the way in there. So, given that he's going to be a below the rim finisher, being able to attack these smaller guards and use his body as a weapon, and have his defender not have the requisite length to bother the finish, it just is starting to click into place for me. Not to mention, again, he's got good wingspan, but not an elite wingspan. the length against guards just feels much more impactful on the other end of the ball. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the points you hit on are valid. Like, I think looking at him now, I don't think he's a guard, but I think he's more of a 2-3 wing versus a 3-2 wing, right? Like, I think his offensive skill set is more suited to the shooting guard position, which, I mean, it's interesting. Like, this could all obviously change as he grows and fills out. Maybe he gets a little taller, fingers crossed. I want to bring back Height Watch this offseason, but we need to see some evidence first. We're gonna
will 6'6 into the universe.
Oh, no, I'm willing 6'7 in here, baby.
You're an animal.
We're getting a 2-inch growth spurt here. I'm speaking it into existence. But I mean, as he continues to physically develop and as his skills develop, maybe he does get to the point where he has that same ability to bully his way past guys that play the three, right? Like, you're just dealing with more length in general. And I think seeing him play the two is giving you that glimpse of, okay, now he has an advantage against guys. It's something that the Cavs haven't really had at that position. I do think as well, it's interesting because as we look for next year, assuming they're drafting a wing, one of these guys is probably going to have to come off the bench, whether it's Garland, Sexton, Okoro, or whoever they pick. One of those four is likely going to have to come off the bench, and the bench needs playmaking. It needs guys that can handle the ball. I wouldn't pass on adding a backup point guard just because Isaac Okoro can do a few things in the pick and roll and whatnot, but having him...
I'll take it a step further. If they pass on a backup point guard because of this stretch from Okoro, then we got some major problems.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But I'm just saying that with the second unit, having Okoro, whether you're staggering him where he subs out early and he can kind of add to the playmaking in the second unit and give them another guy that can handle the ball, kind of fulfilling some of those Andre Iguodala draft comparisons that he had, I think that's a positive. That's an interesting wrinkle. But at the same time, you never know how this is going to play out, right? Like, what combination of young players is going to work best?
Invariably, this is going to become the Colin Sexton discussion. So I do want to say we're gonna save the big we're gonna re-hit the contract discussion because it feels like it's bubbling back up. We're gonna hit that next on the next pod.
Yeah.
But like to the point of the playmaking and kind of Okoro's best fit. What's nice and what has always been nice, regardless of contract talks, is that the Cavs are in a spot where if they draft a playmaker at the wing or guard position, the ones that make the most sense and play the best basketball will be the ones who start and play the most minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, like, it's almost like as much as people want to complicate it by talking about contracts, extensions, etc., really for next season, it's pretty easy, actually. Just play the people who make the most sense and make your team the best.
Yeah. I mean, it should still be a situation where they have to go out there and earn it. Like, I don't think it's difficult to find minutes for all these guys. And if you draft someone like Cade Cunningham that could potentially kind of play that Tatum role at power forward, maybe you have all four of them out there, right? Like, I think people... They like to plan out the team building and what the rotation is going to look like so far in advance when we really need to look at how these guys improve and what combinations work, not only from elevating everybody's individual stats, but also elevating the lineup data. And you're correct. We'll get into kind of the Sexton discussions that are going on next episode. But I just want to go over the stats, the combinations of those three players. Sexland plus Okoro, you got a 105 O rating, 111 D rating, negative 6.1 net rating. Good Lord. That same combination with no Garland, you got a negative 13.1 net rating.
Sounds right.
Garland and Okoro with no Sexton, a minus 5.2. And a Sexland without Okoro has a minus 15.5.
That also sounds right.
Yeah. And oddly enough, Noah Coral really tanks the offense as well as the defense. You got two-way impact there. The only one where the offense is, or sorry, the defense is better than 110 is Garland and Okoro with no Sexton, which, yeah, the best combination of the three when you're talking about balancing offense and defense has been all three of them this year, right? Like, it's you can look at the other combinations wing, whether it be Jetty Osmond, Torian Prince, or whatnot, but the three young players together has been their best lineup.
Yeah, and that's why it's kind of easy as of now. It gets harder when you add a person, but again, it's meritocracy, it's culture, it's building towards something where the best players and the best outcomes are what we're building towards.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't do that and they get in the way of that, then I think that's when grumbles should really start. But in terms of kind of the decisions this coaching staff has made so far, it's hard to gripe too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And the funny enough thing is the core four, the young core with Love and Dean Wade, or either or, has a positive net rating on the year. You just add some spacing there. It's not a lot of minutes. I will say that. The core four has only played 85 minutes with Kevin Love this year, which is kind of frightening that's all that it's been. And Dean Wade, they've only played 116 minutes with him.
Yeah, he had a hell of a game. But it's night was Dean Wade.
Oh my goodness. So I was listening.
He sidestepped his ass into a 3-point attempt and it looked good. He didn't even make it. And I was like, damn, he's feeling himself right now.
he's a fluid athlete out there. He even had a touchdown pass. He's really taking the Kevin Love comparisons to heart. But I was listening back to our podcast,
real quick, can I say this? I can't tell you how many times Kevin will have if Kevin does have a bad game and mm-hmm. people are being critical on Twitter, and I go, oh, he's pretty good. And then I was like, oh, some of those were Dean.
Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's, I can see the confusion.
Misremember. I just associate them as one person on the court.
Often when I get surprised by a play, it's because it's the other one, not the one I was thinking of. Man, you absolutely derailed me. But I was listening back to some of our season preview podcast, kind of discussing when we were discussing what the goals should be for this season, what we were looking for. And we were talking about how nice it would be for someone we didn't expect to step up and become a rotation player. And the guy we identified was Dylan Windler. It would be really great if he stepped up and became a rotation player. That player ended up being Dean Wade. Like, Dean Wade is absolutely a guy that you want to find minutes for moving forward. He contributes on both ends of the floor. He's a good athlete. I think the Cavs have done a really good job of kind of finding some diamonds in the rough, whether it be Dean Wade, Lamar Stevens.
Can I ask you this, though?
Yeah.
Do the Cavs, if Kevin Love is not on the roster, and I know we were going to talk about that soon,
mm-hmm.
do the Cavs have a starting four that they should be happy with between Dean Wade or Larry Nance?
Well, that's actually a great kind of pivot point, because I would argue that the Cavs don't have a starting four on the roster, like, period. And that includes Kevin Love. I don't think I think Larry Nance Jr., you look at the impact stats, he's been the most impactful player this season. But I think his ideal role is that first big off the bench, where you're keeping him healthy, you're limiting the wear and tear, you're allowing him to play with juice all the time rather than wearing him down. And I think right now with Kevin Love, obviously the play hasn't been good. He missed the majority of the season. He hasn't been right physically. But at this point, like, availability is important. It's really, really, really important. And when you're forecasting for the future, I just have a hard time penciling in Kevin Love as the starting power forward when you don't know how many games he's going to be available for, and you don't know how many of those games he's going to be performing at the level of a starter.
Yeah. It's tough, man. I do think Larry has shown a little more than people are crediting. The Cavs mm-hmm. were very, very competent early in the season with him as their starting four.
That's true.
And, you know, I think Larry, more than anyone else on this team, and I think I'm guilty of this too, when he's going through a rough stretch or he's banged up, I forget how effing good he is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, there's a reason he was getting calls from the Cavs were getting calls from contenders at the deadline for him.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there is a perception, especially among the more negative Cavs fans and the fan base, that he is, you know, something of a, like a, you know, if his dad wasn't who he was, then, you know, no one would even care. But, and I'm like, I just don't think that's true, you know? Like you
that,
hear
that sounds
about,
like a Browns fan take.
Well, it is a total Browns fan take. But, like, so, like, and I, but even me, I think I'm guilty of it. Like, he had a really, even after he came back from injury, he wasn't himself. And I was like, so I kind of just slotted on, that's Larry. Like, whatever Larry is right now is what he is in my brain forever for some reason. Mm. But then I kind of forget, like, when he's fully healthy and right, he's like probably the most impactful player on the team by a lot of the catch-all metrics.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just he's hard to figure out, I guess, is my point. I think the fact that he had such a snake-bitten year is kind of coloring the discourse on that front. But mm-hmm. I think we should have the Kevin Love discussion because this is typically we're pretty damn well aligned on this team. And this one, we are not aligned.
Yep.
And I would like to kind of hear your case for what you think the Cavs should do with Kevin Love and kind of what you think the next step should be.
So I think that what the team should do is explore all options. I think you need to have a sit down with Kevin, figure out kind of where the priorities are, because one of the biggest issues with this season has been the lack of continuity. There, some of that is injuries and just how weird this season is. But moving forward, if you want to develop chemistry and if you want to become a consistently good team on both ends of the floor, you need to have reliable guys in the rotation. You need to know what your identity is. And having a big question mark in Kevin Love, where two of the last three seasons, he wasn't available to start the year and missed at least half of the season. That becomes difficult. And I'm not necessarily advocating for buyout, trade, whatever option you want to look at, but I think you need to explore every single option. You need to figure out what level of buy-in you're getting from Kevin Love, because at this point, the torch needs to be passed. He's no longer the best player on this team. And if he's willing to take the Carmelo Anthony route of kind of aging gracefully, it doesn't matter if I'm coming off the bench. It doesn't matter what the role is. I'm just going to try to contribute what I can. There's a value to that. You can acknowledge the role that he has played off the court, the way that he has helped the young kids prosper and become better players. But at the same time, you also have to factor in, is he going to be here? If he gets hurt, how is he going to respond to that? Is he going to have an interview with Chris Haynes where he's saying, yeah, I'd love to play in Portland, but I understand I need to be healthy and I need to play better before I could be traded there? Like, that kind of conversation, it just, as much as I appreciate what Kevin Love has brought to the organization, it's tough to listen to that as a fan, and I have to imagine it's tough to listen to as a teammate.
Justin, I'm going to request you say it with your chest here. Do you think the team needs to move off of Kevin Love?
I think if there's an option to, yeah, like I don't think it's one of those situations where blindly at all costs, I'm not doing a sports radio take here where, yeah, it doesn't matter if you throw a million picks away or whatnot.
No.
But I don't think
any of us wants to. I don't think we're stupid enough, either of us are stupid enough to want to part with assets to get rid of Kevin Love.
Right. But I do think every avenue should be explored to give both him and the team a fresh start, a blank slate. I mean, buyout is so damn tough. Like, that is not an easy pill to swallow because that salary is still on the books for the next couple of years. That's a really tough position to be in. But maybe there's a situation where a team has a couple players where they're not as thrilled paying them, but it's multiple contracts that might be easier for the Cavs to part ways with over the next two seasons while still getting some help and getting some rotation players back. That might be something that is available to them. I don't know what's available to them, so I can't act like I know what solution they should take, but I do think that it should be a priority. I think getting that fresh start and getting a little more stability in the rotation should be a priority, because I mentioned it before. I listened to our start of the season podcast, and what I said was I want to see Garland be a 17-6 guy that kind of shows a flash of star upside. He was that. We said that we want to see Colin Sexton average that kind of 23.5 assists that he did after the Jordan Clarkson trade, because then you get a better idea of whether or not he'd be worth an extension. He did that. The third part, the third most important thing that we said was, by training camp of next season, we need to know what the identity of this team is. This is the, kind of the defining offseason for Coby Altman. And I think figuring out what you're doing with Kevin Love and whether or not he's a part of the next 2 years is the biggest question that you have. A whole lot's going to be determined by the draft lottery. Ping pong balls, we'll figure that out. But when it comes to future planning, what you do with Kevin Love is absolutely the biggest question. So exploring every single avenue and every single option, whether it be him staying with the team and accepting a different role than he might be accustomed to, that's an option, whether it's trade, whether it's buyout, whether it's a stretch, everything has to be examined, in my opinion.
You think a stretch has to be examined?
Well, I'm saying you examine all options. I wouldn't. I'm team never stretch. That's me. I'm just listing every option I can think of. That's an important clarification.
I would just like to say that I think if we were in the DMs, you'd have harder takes than this. I think you're being too nuanced. I think you're speaking with your mind and not with your chest. And I'm fine with it, but I just want to note it that I think you're ready to be done with this relationship based on everything you've kind of given.
I am, but I'm not going to take that to a reckless conclusion. I'm not going to say give up assets to be done. But yeah, I'd like to see him in a situation where he's happier. I'd like to have the team have a bit of a fresh start and to examine more permanent options at that position.
Can I simplify the discussion?
Yeah, go ahead.
Should the Cavs buy out Kevin Love if he is amenable?
I think it's an option that they could do, yes. I think you explore a trade as hard as possible. I think you try to avoid a buyout as hard, like as much as you can. I think you try to avoid a buyout being the end of the Kevin Love era in Cleveland. But yeah, I it wouldn't be something that I would be upset about.
See, it's funny because to me, I am just, you know, you mentioned him like playing a different, you know, accepting a different role. I feel like he has accepted the role. Like he's not. Like, I mean, like the usage is not crazy high. I don't watch him. It's not like I'm seeing them feeding him over and over and over and over again on the offensive end where I'm like, man, can Darius get some reps here? Like, that's not the vibe I get. I feel like really he functions as a spacer and a play connector.
Mm-hmm. But is he going to be fine coming off the bench if he's no longer the best option there?
See, that's I guess the question. Still think he is the best option. I think it's overkill to bench him, especially with, you know, now, like, let's say they draft Evan Mobley, then I'm sorry, Kevin, you're gonna have to come off the bench,
right?
But you know, like, I don't think Dean Wade is, as much as I've been impressed by Wade, I don't think that his institutional value is as strong as Kevin Love's on the offensive end of the ball. I think Larry is best served as a bench player. Like, I think that's where his value is most, you know, most obvious. So I don't feel the need to bench him, and as a result I'm like, the role I'm asking him to play is the role he's already playing. And then I go to the kind of the intangible argument. I mean, you've posted them yourself, the numbers of the Cavs core when healthy since Love's return, and sure, it's not directly attributable, I don't think, like Kevin Love is not the difference between Isaac Okoro shooting like 40% and 60%, right? There's some noise there. But when I see this team, I see just a real dearth of decision-making and basketball IQ and experience. And even though he is not, you know, he is not by any means like the numbers haven't been good for him. Like his jumper has not been as good as you'd hope. He's not drawing fouls as well as he used to, you know, like, everything's down. He's not himself this year at all. But instant, you know, we talked about the offense lacking seasoning. He's a little bit of paprika.
He adds even when he's missing.
He makes the team much more watchable, and I think he demonstrates good habits. You know, in a way, and this is probably an insulting comparison to Kevin, who is, you know, an offensive savant, but, you know, even when Delly came back and it was like, oh, there's someone who can run an offense. And I feel like when you model that for the young players in the team, they start kicking into their own rhythm. I feel like Kevin Love is a super duper charged version of that. And as a result, like, I just can't, I just like, Sure. Like if a trade comes through and they get, you know, a player worth caring about, sure. You know, I don't think I'm going to be throwing a fit, but I'm certainly not interested in paying him not to play here.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly wouldn't stretch it. I think the ideal solution is a trade. And
I think we all know that. I think Kevin knows that. But, like, right now that's not happening.
I'm going to be a little even – I'm going to be a little less respectful than you were with the Delly comp. And the comparison I'm going to draw is Spencer Haas. I think Spencer Haas provided a proof of concept in that last year before LeBron returned where
– That is less respectful.
where you just had spacing. For the first time, you didn't have Andy and TT starting together alongside like Alonzo G and Dion or CJ Miles. And that spacing opened up something. It provided a proof of concept.
Disrespect CJ Miles.
Like I love CJ Miles. I still have love for CJ Miles. But I'm saying it gave you a proof of concept of what Kyrie would look like with a little more spacing. And I think that that's what we're seeing in April with Kevin Love returning to the lineup because he's not shooting well. And there's also the chicken and egg factor of how much has to do with Kevin Love's presence there and how much of it has to do with Darius Garland going from a 17-6 guy to a 21-7 guy. Like Darius Garland was taking the threes that he was passing up before, but that were there. Those shots were there with and without Kevin Love. And I just think it's that proof of concept that, yeah, you need a spacer there, whether it's a big wing that you're playing with the young guys or whether it's another spacing whether it's Larry Nance taking more threes or continuing the three-point shooting that we saw earlier in the season in Dean Wade. Like, I agree with you that Nance is probably best off as a bench player, but that doesn't mean he can't be a starter. Sure. I just would limit his minutes, right? Like maybe you're keeping him at 26 minutes rather than 32. And I think that there's ways around.
But hold on, Justin. We have to keep this simple though. If you buy out a Kevin Love, you are saying I would rather have the minutes at power forward exclusively filled by Larry Nance, Dean Wade, and you know some mix of wing players if health is a problem.
Mm-hmm. I might prefer that.
I just don't see it, man. I can't get there.
Prefer it from a consistency and a continuity standpoint because if Kevin Love is in and out of the lineup, that could be the difference between you. Like maybe your floor is raised because you have a consistent lineup, you have a consistent rotation. Guys know what their roles are going to be. Whereas if he's playing half the season and he's in and out of the lineup every couple weeks, that's going to throw things off. And we've seen how much time this team needs to adjust to new pieces being in the mix. I just think that there is a value to that continuity. I think it gives everybody a better sense of where they stand, what their role should be. And yeah, maybe some guys aren't ready to fill in that decision-making gap and make up for the loss of Kevin Love at the start of the season. But those reps can help them become those type of players, that they can make smarter decisions. I would hope to hell that Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, Isaac Okoro, all these guys are better players entering next season, and history would indicate, yeah, they are. So I for that reason, I would be open to a buyout. Like, that's just where I stand on this.
So I think it should be noted, because I am taking the harder tack here. If they bought him out, I would disagree. But I'm not going to throw a fit. I don't think you're necessarily wrong. I think there's a case for it. I get it. I just feel like the institutional value of him, despite the embarrassing incidents, because like that's kind of my concern here is like, are we making decisions because we got embarrassed? You know,
partly like when you're talking about, did this team achieve their goals of kind of establishing a culture, establishing the accountability that you want? Part of that is like that has to factor into the discussion because I don't think it's necessarily going to get better. Like that's not the way that Father Time works.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that we're ever going to have perfect citizen Kevin. You know, like, I mean, he's always going to have like, but he would, I mean, we had moments like this when they were winning championships. So, you know, right. Like it's hard to know. I think ultimately there, it, you know, when we Oh, did we lose me?
Yeah, your internet got a little fuzzy there. Yeah, well, start actually, your takeover.
Actually, fun fact, I kicked the cord connected to my sound mixer. So
look at you go.
That's what that was. I think it is kind of time. I think that we've kind of said all there is to say about Kevin. And now it's kind of time to say, like, are they building the culture that they need to be building? And it's really hard to know because a lot of things keep going wrong. There are things that are, you know, very clearly, like if you want to list them, there are things going wrong, but I think all of them are explainable. And part of me just wonders, maybe none of it really matters. And if they just get lucky in the right way, get the right piece, they'll just start winning games, you know?
Like, I mean, that's NBA history, right? Like that, you can talk about wanting to establish a culture and have accountability and all those things. Winning has to be part of that. Like it doesn't happen. No team has a great healthy culture because I'd be freaked out.
By the way,
I
had a great example of this that just popped into my head while I was driving the other day. Everyone outside of the Cavaliers community is roasting the Anderson Varejao signing.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just but no one bats an eye at the Miami Heat employing Udonis Haslam, giving him a roster spot every year.
Except for our friend Nikias Duncan, who has been losing his damn mind.
Dear friend Nikias Duncan, who understands how insane that is. But because Heat culture, because Pat Riley, because they're winning, no one cares. No one cares that they have a ceremonial roster spot for a vet. It's not the Cavs' fault that they got so banged up that they had to play their ceremonial signing.
Right. It's not even a roster spot. Like, it's not like they cut Damian Dotson.
It's a 10-day. Yeah. It doesn't. So, it's like. So
a
like
hardship all, exception at that.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, winning, like, is the panacea here. So, like, you know, when we talk about, they got to buy out Kevin Love so they can start building the right culture. I just don't know if I'm there. Because it's like. Mm-hmm. He was part of a pretty freaking good culture that won a title, you know, went to four straight finals. I don't know, man. I just, when I see them on the court and he's on the floor, they seem to understand basketball better.
They do.
At least on the offensive end. And like maybe, and really for all the numbers, for all the arguments, I'm really boiling it all. It all really boils down to that for me, which is I think Kevin Love helps this team develop into what they're going to be, even if he's not going to be there when it happens.
Here's the comparison I'd make, though. So when we were talking in the offseason, it was, okay, Tristan's gone. That has been kind of the bedrock of culture. He's been great in the locker room. He obviously was a massive part of the championship. And at the time, there was no extension found with Andre Drummond. And it was, hey, with Tristan gone and Drummond likely leaving the team at some point here, you're going to be left with no real centers. Like, it's JaVale McGee. And, like, who knows? Maybe Dean Wade has to play some minutes there, or Kevin or Larry has to play minutes there. And without cap space, you got Jared Allen and you got Hardenstein in the mix. Yes, having Kevin Love makes a difference, but I just don't know how irreplaceable
I don't think he's irreplaceable at all, to be very, very clear. And if the roster circumstances change, I mean, let's say they draft Cade and Cade adds enough playmaking injection to what they're doing that just a more of a pure shooter like Dean Wade that maybe gives you a little bit more on the defensive end, but isn't quite the, you know, savant that Kevin is. Maybe the scales tip at that point. I just don't think we're there yet. And until I see the roster that makes it make sense to, you know, the option that makes it make sense to me, I just would rather have Kevin Love on the team. I don't want to pay him to go away.
Yeah. And this might be a decision you make at next year's trade deadline. Like, I'm not saying that this is something that has to be rushed, that they have to part ways. I'm just saying that I would aggressively explore every option this summer. Like, that's just where I stand. And circling back to kind of the culture talk and you wondering if any of this matters, like, I think if you're assigning a pass-fail grade to it, it's a fail. Like, they didn't accomplish their goals this year because their goals were to make the play-in game that didn't occur and to kind of solidify a team identity and establish a culture of accountability. But the thing I would note is that, or the comparison that I would make is, in December, I decided to lose weight. I wanted to get down from 225 to 195 by the time softball season comes around in the spring. I lost 20 pounds, but I didn't achieve my goal. If I'm talking about pass fail, did I achieve my target weight? I failed. But that doesn't mean me eating healthier and losing some weight wasn't a worthwhile thing. The target was still in mind. You still made some progress towards your goal. Yeah, I had a few days where I ate like crap. I was a little inebriated. I ordered delivery and I made some mistakes. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't a worthwhile endeavor to try to lose weight and to set a target. I worked my way towards it, and I'm closer to my goal than I was at the start of the year. And I feel like that's the situation with the Cavs. For the majority of the year, this was a team that went from one of the worst defenses in history to an average one. You don't get that without buy-in, especially for a team this young. The offense, when they had their pieces, was decent. Like, it was passable. It was near league average. We talked about how it looked in April. That was really nice to see. Yeah, things didn't break your way. There were explainable circumstances, but if you're assigning a pass-fail grade to it, it's a fail. But I do feel like this is still a team that's trending in the right direction. And the benchmarks we wanted to see, the growth we wanted to see from the young players, came to pass. Like, that occurred this year. And ultimately, I think that's the most important thing when you're evaluating the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's are they closer? And I do want to dedicate more time. I know we're running long here on the podcast. I want to kind of dedicate a significant chunk of a podcast to, like, let's really evaluate what this season was, what it meant, mm-hmm. where they succeeded, where they failed.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
But with that said, do I think they're closer to being a competent team? Because again, like we've said it over and over again, we just want competence. At mm-hmm. least I do. I got my ring. Metaphorically, they did not give me a ring. I got my ring. I just want, I've said several times, I'd love to be the Pacers. I'd love to be the Grit and Grind Grizzlies.
Mm-hmm.
And just be a team that is kind of scrappy and just, you know, exceeds the sum of their parts. Are they closer to that today than they were at the beginning of the year? I think so. Mm-hmm. So to that end, you know, I'm not too down despite, you know, a pretty brutal end of the season, frankly.
Yeah, and like I'm just really encouraged by the young core, but at the same time, when I say they need to be aggressive in figuring out ways to accentuate that young core and to evaluate every single option with the vets, with the young players, and look to improve, the league is ridiculous right now. Carter, if the play-in didn't exist, here are some names of players that would miss the playoffs. Lowry, Van Vliet, Siakam, Beal, Westbrook, LaVine, Vucevic, Sabonis, Turner, LeVert, Brogdon, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Horford, Dort, Towns, Russell, Edwards, Fox, Hield, Halliburton, Zion, Lonzo, Ingram, Bledsoe, DeRozan, Murray, Morant,
Bledsoe,
Jackson,
how dare you?
And Valanciunas. Like, a lot of these teams have good promising cores. The worst teams in the league, pretty much, with like the exception of Houston and Detroit, have young, interesting cores. You need to find ways. Like right now, having two stars isn't enough. You have to have the supporting cast that accentuates them, that elevates them. And I think that that's got to be the goal for this team. Like they've got to find.
I mean, look at Toronto. All you got to know is look at Toronto. That team is 10 games under 500.
Dude, like it's, well, everyone calls, or not everyone, but a lot of people call the bubble the Mickey Mouse ring. I think this season, like the gap between reality and the results of this season is larger than any year. This is the true kind of asterisk season, if you want to sign one, because like Toronto was in the playoffs when they had everybody. Then they got wrecked with COVID. Boston's been wrecked with injuries, with COVID. Like every single team, like the teams at the top of the league are the healthiest. That's really what this season has come down to. And I just think that it's not a representative sample size for anybody, and Cavs included. Like, I think this is a team that's better than its record. And the benefit of that is they're likely going to be picking higher than they would have been if they were healthy all of the season. And that's fortunate, but you have to get those lucky breaks. You still have to get the lucky break in the lottery. And
come on!
And, like, recognizing that lucky break and capitalizing on it is going to be one of the most important things. I've got some takes for the draft. We got so much to discuss. I'm excited to be pivoting to some offseason talk and evaluating the draft, free agency, all everything that's coming up. I'm really excited for it.
Hey Justin, can I real quick?
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, while you were monologuing there, I just went ahead, ran a tankathon. It is written, my friend.
Mm.
Come on. Let's go.
I can't really read it on the screen. Okay, here we go. Okay, OKC falls only to fifth. So I'm of the, or no, they fall to seven. Yeah, that's right. That should be what happens. OKC deserves all the bad karma. They should fall to seven, eight, wherever. I don't want to see that team do well.
Here's the thing with them, though, is like you've got bad karma clashing because you got Houston bad karma.
Mm-hmm.
Going up against OKC, bad karma because of the way the Chris Paul deal worked out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in this scenario, OKC, yeah, they fall, but they also get Houston's pick. Gross. Anyways, I just don't want to see them do well. I'm going to be pretty crushed if they win the lottery over the Cavs or if they pick higher.
Unfortunately,
than the Cavs.
I kind of like them still. I don't like what they're doing, but I like their guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, they are Team Canada right now, so I'll give them a little bit of a nod, but overall, just not too happy with it. But you know what? There's so much to talk about. I could honestly, this podcast could go for 3-4 hours at this point. Like, I'm fired up. There's a whole lot to discuss, but you know what? We got a whole off season to talk about it. So we will be back on Thursday. We will be live streaming at 7 Eastern, talking a little Colin Sexton, probably some more of this kind of extended culture talk. Hope you guys are enjoying it. If you guys have any suggestions for what we're talking about or talking points or things you want us to discuss, you can send that via email, chasedownpod@gmail.com. While you're there, you can send us a screenshot of the review you left for this podcast, because that's the best way to support us. You can leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books, and send that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com if you want to have an invite to our exclusive Discord chat. If you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe. It's the best way to help us show up on those algorithms. Hope you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cats.